Hey, everybody, I'm Chris Fafalius, and I'm the producer of Krista Makes a Podcast and the host of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
And I'm Matt Kelly, host of Horror Movie Night and the producer slash the head of content for the Geekscape Podcasting Network.
Between the two of us, we have, believe it or not, 25 years of podcasting experience, and we want to help you start your own podcast.
We know podcasting, and we want to share that knowledge with you.
So whether you're new to podcasting or you want some feedback on your currently active podcast, we want to help.
Or perhaps you're just overwhelmed with all of the editing work. Well, we can help you with that also.
You can contact us at info@weknowpodcasting.com for more information.
We're excited to help your podcasting dreams become a reality. Everybody, we are back, and it is the 1950s, baby. Because of me, I was like, let's watch The Deadly Mantis. And here's the thing, I gotta give you an upfront apology. Most of The Deadly Mantis is trash, but it's an hour and 10 minutes, so whatever. I have always been weirdly obsessed with the movie The Deadly Mantis, even though I hadn't seen it until literally 2 years ago. I posted a picture on my Instagram very recently that was the book, The Deadly Mantis, the orange, like, monsters collectible books. And I used to take that book out of the library and just look at the pictures of this mantis prop and be like, that looks so fucking cool. Little did I know that the actual Deadly Mantis was just stock footage the movie with the occasional Deadly Mantis.
You know, that's what's so funny about this movie, and I have a feeling some more movies that you're picking in the near future, is that, like, they had to pad for time, and it was still only an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's a little rough. It's admittedly a little bit rough. I mean, the movie essentially starts off with, like, a three-minute instructional video on radar history.
Yeah, that's really weird. That's the thing. That's what I'm saying, is that, like, when you watch this, what were they trying? Did they have some sort of, like, Matt, you're the one who always does the research on the behind the scenes stuff. So you tell me, did they have to have, like, a minimum runtime, kind of like Chucky Band had to? And so he'd have, like, 10 minutes of Full Moon's catalog and beforehand.
I mean, I think that obviously you don't want to release a film that's under an hour, because then it's barely even a film. So I feel like that was always the standard, that a feature-length film is at least 60 minutes. But, you know, it's weird. These are, like, the thing that I like about this era of cinema. We'll take a quick temperature check here. Like, I think we all know that this is a bad movie. But can we also all agree that there's something charming about, like, late 50s films where, like, even when they're bad, they're not, like, intolerable. Like, we've watched some intolerable movies in our past, but, like, this was whatever. This was like a popcorn movie without as much excitement as watching popcorn pop.
Yeah, no, it wasn't bad. The thing with 50s movies specifically, that's always a challenge for me, and I'm sure I could have just Googled it and found out, but I'm lazy, is, like, it's hard to tell if this was a low budget movie or a high budget movie. Because watching it in 2021, you're like, ah, this is low budget. But, like, in the 50s...
I'm pretty sure they spent $0 on this film.
Yeah, no, I
really?
Well, see, I kind of agree with you, Brian. I think that what happened is that they were given a budget. Who knows what the budget was, but they were given a budget. And then they were like, I think they just paid us for what it's going to cost to build the mantis. So then they, like, built this pretty impressive mantis. And then afterwards was like, oh, that was the whole film budget. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what do we got in the stock footage library? Like, let's pull some footage. Let's pull random footage of Eskimos in canoes and let's just speed that shit up.
That shit is that does not sit well with me. And also, are they Inuit or are they supposed to be Greenland that they were going over in that section? I don't know, man, but it is.
Let me see. It was stock footage from some other movie.
Was it like, no, it wasn't the fucking first documentary.
Footage shown of Eskimos fleeing from the mantis is actually from the movie SOS Iceberg from 1933. Okay. So this came out in 1957. Like,
they're like, no one's gonna know. It's
I missed that part. That's so much funnier that it was like 25-year-old footage. They're just like, I don't know, just throw it in there. Fuck it. And the fact that it's so sped up, it just cuts to a bunch of dogs running around for a couple seconds. Like, it is just that. Like, I think that that's where the movie is a little charming. It's a bad movie. It's so all over the place. And most of the time, it's like, I just want to see the mantis. I just show me the mantis. Show me that stiff-ass flying mantis prop. That's all I need. I don't need the story of the scientists. Like,
oh, you mean the weird misogyny that's going on at that base where they're like, a female woman. I thought they stopped making them.
Yeah, well, I mean, welcome to 1957 at that point.
I suppose that's true.
But yeah, it's just one of those. Yeah. I mean, these are encapsulations of their time. For sure. But I don't know. There's something charming about, like, I keep coming back to the word charming. It's charming when I watch these types of movies because they are just like, at the end of the day, and this is the comparison that I will probably make multiple times throughout this year, but like, I will take a Deadly Mantis movie over a Sharknado movie. You know what I mean? Like, I will take the, like, we honest to God are just trying to make a movie to show off this mantis versus, like, I don't know, we could just CGI a tornado that's got sharks in it and call it a day, really.
There's some rose tinted to that statement, you know, for both me and you. And the weird thing is, it's not even like it's rose tinted because it's like, oh, this is
neither
what
one
we
of us saw this
childhood.
Until recently.
It's, yeah, it was just more like, hey, this reminds me of the drive-in diner at Disney. Yeah, I love Disney.
For sure.
I'll watch
that's
movie.
Exactly what it is.
Well, that's because, like, the story with this one is, like I said, I used to read that book all the time and look at the pictures. Oh my God. Psychologically, we just figured out something. But this is the origin story of, like, Matt's obsession with big animal movies. Was, like, as a kid, reading the Deadly Mantis book over and over and over again and being like, this looks so cool. It's a mantis, but it's giant.
And deadly.
I was all about, I'm going to name a couple movies and it's totally fine if people still want to use them as their double features later. But, like, this, Tarantula, Them, like, all of these 50s films that are all basically the same concept of, like, hey, nuclear explosion made insects big. Humans didn't get affected by it. That's weird. And so, like, I was obsessed with all of these movies, none of which I actually got around to seeing until college. Because, like, a lot of the old 50s horror stuff that Brian and I watched was through my grandfather, who really didn't have a lot of, like,
sci-fi. He was he was Universal. He was a Universal
guy. So he had, like, every
actually
Dracula.
This was Universal.
Well, it was, but he was but he was like the main monster stuff. He was like all the Dracula movies, all the Frankenstein movies, all the Wolfman movies. He even had like a couple Hammer Wolfman movies, I realize now in retrospect, like Fury of the Werewolf and stuff.
Yeah, he had a few. I thought he had a lot more, and then when I was looking at it, it was just that Universal recast it a lot. So like he would have like a Dracula, you know, like the whatever one came after the Son of Dracula, and it wasn't Bela Lugosi, but it was put out by the same company.
How do you pronounce that last name?
Lugosi?
I think it's Lugosi.
It is Lugosi.
I don't know.
It's funny when a Kelly roasts a Kelly about
isn't he German?
But Brian, you have talked about how Ed Wood is your favorite, one of your favorite movies, and they say Bela Lugosi that whole movie.
Okay. And I talk about how Say Anything is my favorite band, and I still call him Max Bemis, even though it's Bemis.
Fair enough. Okay, touche. Maybe Lugosi was in its original German, but once he became a star in America, he was Lugosi.
No, that's not true. Listen, Khalil's name is Khalil. Just because he moved to the suburbs and everyone calls him Khalil doesn't make his name Khalil. Just makes us dumb.
Yeah, but if he started marketing himself as Bela Lugosi, that's on him.
Oh, that's
if
true.
He wasn't stopping people in an interview and saying, actually, it's Lugosi.
Well, in his defense, how many times I'm like, and who am I speaking with? Brian? Ryan? Sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No.
I think that's more an indictment of yourself.
No, I've been there. I've been called Mike a million times on support calls, and I've just been like, I don't want to embarrass this person. They're not going to talk to me ever again. There's no reason to be like, actually, it's Matt. Anyway, bye forever. Like, I can be Mike. That's fine. But yeah, we didn't grow up on these movies, but I think that that's almost what built like such an allure to them. And my first chance seeing this was literally, as a lot of people who listen to the show know, I get a lot of like advanced copies of Scream Factory releases. I have never clicked reply so quickly as when I got the press release that was like, Scream Factory releasing Deadly Mantis and Tarantula. And I was like, oh! It replies so fast. And I think in all caps, it was like, I have been wanting to see this movie since I was three. Like, I was so excited for Deadly Mantis. And I, like, usually those will show up. And, like, I won't immediately run and throw them in the Blu-ray player and be like, oh, cool, I'll watch this sometime this week. Oh, I got to that Blu-ray player real fucking fast to pop in Deadly Mantis. Like, it was like a kid getting candy after going out for Halloween, where you're just like, I just want to look at the haul. I want to see what's in there. I'm going to eat all the best pieces. That was me watching Deadly Mantis.
You saved some guy's job for 1 month.
Oh, for
sure. Like, you just bought him an additional month. Like, he was like, see, Steve, you told me it would be a waste of money to print this Blu-ray, but look at all the fan mail we're getting. And then a month later, they're like, all right, John, we sold one copy, and it was an advanced screening for free.
You know, the funnier thing, too, is that, like, Matt being over-exuberant with Scream Factory at that point, probably they were like, let's just snooze this conversation for 30 days. We need some space.
They're like, it's so weird. He didn't respond when we were offering him the complete Friday the 13th collection, but man, did he respond to Deadly Mantis and Tarantula. It's not a great movie. It's not even really a good movie. So, Scott, I do have to ask you, because I've mentioned this a couple times, but no one seems to back me up on this. Am I the only one that thinks that the mantis actually looks good in this movie?
Oh, the mantis is badass.
Okay. I was like getting concerned.
It looks good. I think I hold a record for this movie. It took me 7 times to watch this movie.
Oh, dear God. That's like
you fell asleep
every 10 minutes.
Nah, I mean, in the movies, it's not really slated at the movie. It's been a busy week. So like, I'll like watch it on my lunch break, which my lunch break has been like 10 to 15 minutes, and I had to watch it on Possum, Falsum, whatever the free app is, which had like 5 minute commercials in between it.
So you did watch a full length movie.
Yeah, so there's something worse than Tubi. Got it.
Yeah, no, it's like really, yeah, it's really bad.
That's unfortunate. But yeah, okay, so I just wanted to make sure.
And speaking of the movie that we're discussing, I don't know, last week or next week, I don't keep track. Whatever one we're recording today, I had to watch on Tubi as well, because bringing back the Brian Ryan thing, Scott sent me a JPEG of the movie and I didn't have the heart to tell him, so then I just watched.
Fucking really?
Scott, did you just send him the poster?
I think it's something sent weird.
Oh, yeah, okay. Something sent weird. No, I'll have to look. Oh, I remember when that happened. I was like, wow, that transferred really fast.
Oh, that's so funny.
There is one thing that we gotta talk about in this film. It's how bad the kissing is. Oh. Like, the worst goddamn kisses I've seen in weeks.
50s had some bad stage kissing, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, do you know about, like, the weird MPAA, or I guess this was Hays Code, the Hays Code kissing rule?
No, I don't know about this.
Okay, so, Brian, you can back me up on this a little bit, because I think you know this probably even better than I do. But obviously the Hays Code was this very, very, very strict rule about filmmaking, where it was like the villain always has to die. You know, women who are, you know, this type of characteristic can't get the man at the end. Like if they're overly sexualized, they can't get the man at the end. They have to, you know, be alone. Like stuff like just very strict moral code stuff. And one of the things was that a kiss couldn't last more than like 3 to 5 seconds. And if it went longer than that, it had to get cut. So one of the things that, like, it's an Alfred Hitchcock story, but one of his movies, to get around that, he would, instead of having one long romantic kiss, they would kiss for 5 seconds, have a little bit of dialogue, kiss again for 5 seconds, have a little bit more dialogue, kiss again. Like, so he was just like, I want this to feel romantic, and nothing feels romantic if you're only doing a quick 3 second kiss, but multiple kisses feels even more romantic than one long kiss.
You know, that makes a lot of sense. Like, I've seen a lot of 40s movies and 50s movies, but probably more mm-hmm. along the lines of like the 40s when this, like where this is coming to mind, but like they'll kiss for like maybe 2 seconds and then they'll talk and then they're like in the throes of passion and they'll kiss and then talk. I never really thought about that. I just thought that that was like a screenwriting quirk that they had back then, but that's kind of mind-blowing. I love that information.
Yeah,
thank you.
That's very creative on that.
Yeah, that was,
I actually thought it had something to do with the regulations. I was watching like one of the Christmas carols many years ago, and when they went to kiss, it didn't show it. There was just like the guy was holding presents and they kissed behind presents. I'm like, that's weird. They weren't allowed to kiss. And then I looked it up. They're brother and sister.
Oh, yeah, that would do it. I mean, that's where you have like even the stuff like a movie like Casablanca. It's like when they kiss and it's a big romantic kiss, it fades out. You know what I mean? Like they really were so strict on this time limit. And that's just stuff I learned from watching a lot of weird documentaries about that era of filmmaking.
The fact that you didn't bring this up when we did Fade to Black really disappoints me.
Well, I mean, it wasn't as important in Fade to Black. No one brought up the weird kissing back then.
Yeah, they just brought up the weird masturbation.
Well, I mean, there was no Hays codes about masturbation. You could go crazy there.
Well, times have not changed. I do have to say another thing about it. Back to the kissing scenes in this, because it's really my big takeaway from the movie. Because I've seen all the scenes with the mantis like separately. This was my first full watch of the movie. But the funniest thing about it is like at the end when, you know, the mantis is vanquished and, you know, the photographer woman is supposed to go up and take a picture, then the scientist or whatever like whips her off of her feet, whisks her off of her feet and is kissing her, and she says, "Put me down." I said, "Put me down." And then he puts her down, and in my mind, like the best way to save yourself from the embarrassment of being, you know, the guy in that situation is be like, "Okay, well, you're not that good of a kisser anyway." You know, like, no, I will not make out with you.
But yeah, and then you did bring up the tunnel scene. Tunnel scene's a great little ending set piece, a tunnel that does not exist in New York, the Manhattan Tunnel. Even, you know, following all the way into the 90s, we still know the rule that the monster isn't truly dead.
This couldn't have been the first time, right?
Oh, no, and it certainly won't be the last time, where the claw just starts to raise, like, oh, shit! They just start opening fire on it again. It's like, okay, now it's really dead. You know, it's a goofy little film from 1957, and I'm glad that I picked it, and I want to know what are your double features, but I'll go first because I picked this one. I'm going to double feature this, actually not with another big animal movie, but the 50s blob movie. This just felt like it would have fit in perfectly if you were sitting at a drive-through, and then right after this, you hear the sweet sounds of the blob theme song, and you're like, oh boy, here we go. It's the blob.
I will go with Cloverfield, which okay. I don't love Cloverfield, but I love the little crab monsters.
Yeah.
And if we're going for, I mean, and I haven't seen any of the other, I haven't seen the Cloverfield Paradox or, what's the one with John Goodman?
Oh, 10 Cloverfield Lane. 10 Cloverfield Lane's so really good. That's the best one of the series for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the fact that you know awesome. It's a Cloverfield movie kind of ruins it a little bit because.
Well, everybody knows it's a Cloverfield movie now.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I kind of went in there before I fully knew. I was like, oh, that's weird that they used the word Cloverfield in this movie title, but like you're just watching, you're like, all right, whatever. And then you're like, oh shit. Like, I love secret sequels.
Well, wasn't it not even supposed to be Cloverfield? I thought it wasn't.
Yeah, I thought it was Cloverfield movie, and they shoehorned it in the 11th hour.
Maybe.
It would make a lot more sense because I don't think the ending was supposed to be. I think the ending ruined it. And if you cut out the 5 minutes, it would have been a perfect thriller.
Yeah, well, it's
yeah, but that's also why I haven't watched it, yeah, because I don't give a fuck about thrillers.
Yeah,
the whole time your brain is just doing like mental gymnastics trying to figure out if this is a kidnapping story or actually a heroic story.
I like the idea of Matt's anything doing gymnastics. It just makes me chuckle.
Well, I would double feature this with King Kong because this obviously was inspired by it. if you take the Empire State Building and the Washington Monument, put them side by side, King Kong is better.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that they, like, straight up pulled some audio clips from, like, King Kong. Like, I feel like there's, like, a King Kong scream in this movie.
Yeah.
So when this was released in 1957, it was the B film in the double feature drive-in with a spy movie called The Girl and the Kremlin.
In the Gremlin? Oh, would have been cooler.
Starring Zsa Gabor.
Just a James Dean looking gizmo.
Yeah, so we what's happening here, what I'm learning, is that we put way more effort into good double features that make sense on our movie night than they actually did in the 50s.
Yeah, because Matt, no one's getting a handy listen to our podcast.
You don't know that.
Speak for yourself.
Listeners, hmmpodcast@gmail.com. If you've gotten a handy while listening to our podcast, I'd like to know. All right, so what is something...
Listen, time to kick shame you.
So what is something that you've watched or listened to or read that you want to talk about? I already spoiled this for Scott's wife this week, but I finally watched Newsies this week, and boy,
she was livid
that I watched Newsies.
That you haven't seen it. This long.
Oh, gotcha. I was like she seemed really excited that I liked it. But yeah, I finally watched Newsies. Good film. And then I also followed it up by watching the 2017 Broadway performance of Newsies that was also on Disney Plus, which was also really good. I am a Newsies fan.
He's a Newsies fan.
Yes. All right, but that's it.
Yeah, yeah. I still, one of the great disappointments of my marriage, not on my side, but on Megan's, besides the fact that she married me, is the fact that when the Newsies musical came to Cleveland, I didn't try and buy tickets like the day they became available, and it sold out within like a day. So she didn't get to see the Newsies. At least we got to see Hamilton.
Yeah, I think that that's a win. Yeah.
So I want to talk about St. Maude, because I got to see St. Maude, which, you know, everybody's been waiting for it. It was supposed to be out last year. It's the new A24 movie. It's good. I mean, I like it. It's for a slow burn, as you know, their stuff typically is. The pacing's great. I'm not really a slow burn guy, but I really liked the pacing of it. I was not disappointed so much. During the movie, I was kind of waiting for certain things to happen that didn't, and that's okay, because I think that the point of the movie is not what I was gunning for, and that's okay. Like, but what I really liked about the movie is, and I'm trying to keep it very vague, but what I really liked about the movie is the fact that it took everyday occurrences and through the eyes of the, you know, the main character, Maude, it gives them a supernatural tinge. And it's, you know, kind of like, it's been a long, long time since I watched like A Beautiful Mind, you know, about schizophrenia, but I feel like the idea of like religious mania is an awesome kind of like horrifying concept for a movie, but to pull it off in such a way where it feels like a toilet flushing and watching the water go down, or watching a bug move, and having that without any words imply religious significance and like validity is super, super cool. And they succeeded in that way. So I think it's a very good movie. I don't know when the next time I'll watch it is, because it's not like Midsommar, where it's like super heavy. It's definitely not like Hereditary, which is like, you know, jaw drop, holy fuck kind of movie. It's just like,
but it's also not super light. Like, it's kind of,
it's not, yeah. Super, yeah, exactly. But it's since it's a slow burn and it's a little heavier than my typical fare, it may be a couple years before I watch it again. But I think it's a really, really good movie, and I'm looking forward to watching it again and catching more small details, because it's one of those kinds of movies where I think, super pun super intended, but like the devil's in the details kind of thing.
I would say that that's kind of like the A24 like bread and butter, right? And Brian obviously has watched way more of them more times than either one of us has, but yeah. Like, they definitely seem to specifically make movies that do kind of require a second or third viewing for you to catch all of what's being shown symbolically throughout the film. Brian, how about you tell us what you've been watching or doing, Mr. Busybody, because You know, you could only watch a 74-minute long movie in 7 increments. So I doubt you got a lot of pleasure watching this week.
Well, last night after we got caught up on our shows, we watched the Britney Spears documentary, The New York Times Presents. It's good. I think everyone should watch it. I just, people just don't get it. It drives me crazy. Like, everyone was sharing about the Britney Spears thing, and I'm like, oh, this is awesome. You know, and I watched it and I agree. But then, like, the next day, I see that a video of Bam Margera has got like 1 million shares and 1 million views. And it's like, are you not getting the point? Like, this is what gives paparazzi's value. Like, stop getting a fetish on people's downfalls, or when they're in the, whether you like the people or not, like, they're human beings. And I just, you're just shedding a light on them at their lowest. You know, the guy is like a crippling alcoholic and is pretty much crying for help, but in a very deniable way. I'm not saying feel for him, but don't like market his fucking failure. That's like what the whole documentary is about, is like preying on people when they're vulnerable and no one gets it.
Yeah. It's a bad habit of our entire society, right? Like, it is very easy for us to retroactively jump on the white horse and be like, this was wrong, but at the exact same time be repeating those exact same bad tendencies in the present with what's happening.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just like human nature, unfortunately, is that I feel like humans are essentially designed to not fully comprehend what they're doing or what they're saying or what they're thinking until retrospectively. I think that's why, like, I consider myself a good person, and I think that I was always a good person, but I can still look back at things that I said or did 10, 15 years ago and go, I probably wouldn't
yeah,
have said...
Yeah, those always happen in the middle of the night, too.
Yeah, it's like, you learn, and that's like the... But if you're not using that information to grow and learn, you're kind of wasting that energy. If you can't look at, like, man, it was fucked up when I did that 15 years ago, and then you just keep doing it anyway, that's not growth. But, like, being able to say, oh, that was fucked up, and, like, making an actual honest-to-goodness change in your life to not continue to do those fucked up habits is a good thing.
Yeah, because, like, there's so many... I mean, I look back at what I knew of Britney Spears, and it was like, she lost her mind. She shaved her head, she went ballistic, you know, on that car. And then you realize, like, okay, shaving her head, when she did that, it was like, she was just so fed up and pretty much shaved her head to be like, listen, I'm not that fucking pop star anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to be the person you want me to be. And then the umbrella to the car thing, they like show the footage of like, she's trying to see her kids, and the paparazzi follows her to her ex-husband's house, to a gas station, to her ex-husband, and she keeps asking him to leave her alone. So then finally she took an umbrella out and beat the paparazzi's car with it, which is like justified. You know, we're normal. We don't get like harassed by people every time we leave the house, so we don't really know that. Like, I can only imagine. When I have to go to a party, I'm ready to break down and hit someone just for talking to me.
Well, that's why I always have loved the John Waters quote, where he says he's the right level of famous because only people he would want to interact with recognize
him. Yeah, we're going to have the most problematic podcast one day. I just know it. People are going to find episode 12 and be like, look at him. They were praising this guy, and look at all the horrible things he just did.
Yeah, you know what? Like I said, our podcast is all about growth and looking at what you did wrong and saying, oops, sorry, we won't do that again. We've learned our lesson. That's why we can watch a movie as problematic as Deadly Mantis and say, yeah, but look at that mantis prop. So that was Deadly Mantis from 1957. As always, it's so weird to say a year that long ago. I'm so used to being like 1980, but 1957. But don't worry, we'll be right back in the 90s next week with Scott's pick. One that, again, similarly to My Bloody Valentine just a couple weeks ago, one that's kind of insane to think that it took us almost 300 episodes to get around to talking about, because it has been a very heavily quoted film in the horror movie night canon. In fact, so heavily quoted, Scott sent a picture of the quote to Brian as the movie. So tune in next week to find out what that movie is.
Piper, Patrick Lacey, S. E. Howard, Waylon Jordan, and Jeremy Herbert. Five acclaimed authors of horror and dark fiction. Their twisted tales appeared in the acclaimed horror anthology Worst Laid Plans from Grindhouse Press. Now, their tales of vacation terror are coming to the big screen in a feature film adaptation from Genre Blast Films. Five acclaimed genre filmmakers will bring these stories to life. Samantha Koyeznik, John Hale, Vanessa Yonta Wright, Michael Escobedo, and Jeremy Herbert. Worst Laid Plans. Now crowdfunding on Indiegogo. This is one vacation you'll be dying to take.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.